Well, thank you again, everyone, for being here this morning. And again, blue skies. You see, I'm focused today on blue skies. But thanks for everybody for being here. Thank you, Bill, for doing the magic with the sound system, as you always do. And this morning, I'm going to, and this is going to be a continuing theme over the course of this spring, I'm going to talk about the first of the six sources, which are on the back of your order of service if you want to look at them. There are six, and they all are very important for the future, not only in Unitarian Universalism, but I suspect this congregation as well. So I decided that instead of talking about the war in Europe, which I think we need to take a little bit of a break for at least an hour from, I want to take a respite from that news and really talk about this first source, because it's the one that a number of Unitarian Universalists that I know, not here by the way, get quite irritated about. And it's controversial. So a number of years ago, I was working with a church sort of south and sort of west of here, and I planned a series of services on the six sources. The Sunday service committee, not the worship committee, they didn't want to call it that. The Sunday service committee at that congregation wanted me to remove all of the offensive words. I inquired as to what words they disliked. They shared those with me as well as some phrases that they didn't like either. I said, they wanted me to remove them. And I said, okay. I asked them to give me about 10 minutes and I'd come up with something. A few minutes later, I said, I have it. I said, do you want to hear the version with those bad words and phrases? I said, yes. Okay. Direct of that. Affirmed in all cultures, which, us, to, a, of, the, and openness. There was silence in the room. Somebody said, we hoped you would replace those words with ones that we like. I replied that the sources stand on their own merits, and words are very powerful and worthy of embracing. They're poetic words. They would be empty of meaning if they weren't there. And I know the words are challenging ones from some, but not all, in most of our congregations. Many of our new visitors are much more intrigued about words like awe and spirit and many others. And they hope to understand and experience such concepts, such ideas, in authentic new ways that they might not have ever heard before. Now, we don't have to accept the traditional definitions of words, after all. We can change them if we have to. We are Unitarian Universalists, after all. So let's take a look quickly at some of those words and phrases that the Sunday service team didn't like. Let's start with direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder. That can mean many things. I sometimes will go down to French Creek and meditate to the sound of the water, not when it's icy and flooding, but just listen to the flow of the water in the river creek. Some days when I'm sitting on my porch, the sunset over the western hills is gorgeous. It's awesome. It's beautiful. Anyone who has been to a national park, let's say the Grand Canyon as an example, have said that they feel overwhelmed and awed by such a magnificent sight and feeling that not is just here in the head, but also in the heart. Imagine experiencing the presence in your arms of a newborn baby who's looking around at the world, thinking, what the hell happened? but seeing the world, experiencing it for the first time in wonder. All these are examples of direct experience and transcendence. Because transcendence itself means to move or be in a state of mind beyond normal experience. And the examples I shared above are all states that for brief moments of time, we move beyond our normal emotions and feelings and state of being, worried about the future, worried about the past, worried about our fantasies, but for a moment, we take it all in. Something happens that we pay attention to that fills us with awe, with meaning, with heart. The next objectable phrase was, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit. And the key word here, as you might expect, is spirit. The Sunday services team said they didn't like the word because it meant God, and they didn't believe in God. I said, okay. I said, could you imagine the word spirit, like spiritual, is being in relationship beyond ourselves, beyond our own isolated selves, but in relationship to everything around us? Or if they didn't like that, relationship, maybe just life. That spirit is life. Could they mentally translate that bad word into being relational or just life as it is? Grudgingly, they said, all right. The final phrase that they didn't like was, to the forces which create and uphold life. That sounded just a bit deterministic to them again, and again, they were worried that God might be involved somehow. I asked them, well, what about the power of love? And as an aside here, I'll just mention that those of you who were here last Sunday remember that Rick Holmgren did a really wonderful service on love and how we create, out of love, beloved community. So the power of love is very important to us. So could that possibly be a force to create and uphold life? Well, at this point, they nodded their heads and they again grudgingly said, well, okay, just for the Sunday, we'll let these definitions stand. They were lovely people, by the way. My personal belief is that the first source, like the others, but the first source invites us to find wonder and awe in the mysteries and the extraordinary unknowns of the world. And we try to analyze them, but this is a time when no analysis is necessary. Imagine being someplace or in a situation where you are just filled with awe, with a sense of blessing or grace, or just simply resting in the present moment. How did it feel? No analysis. How did it feel? And such events can renew our appreciation for our lives, for our hopes, for our understanding of love, and the lives of others and the world itself. But it's more than just poetic words. All six sources call upon us to learn by actions as well as words. Because if we read something and say, okay, that's nice, let's get on to the next thing, then it doesn't give us the opportunity to learn, to love, to move beyond our comfort zones. And I'll give you an example. The last 2 years, we had to learn Zoom. And we had to use it every Sunday. Was it out of my comfort zone? Yes. But we learned it. And hopefully we learn some good things out of it. Well, what about this first source? How can it be of help to us as we move towards spring? I know many of us love to be in nature. We take walks, we hike, we ski, and we pause to take in fresh, clean air. It's wonderful when it happens. Even this morning when it was cold out, when I stepped outside on the porch before the cats grabbed me for breakfast, I took a deep breath of the cold, fresh air. And it was glorious. And it's those moments that give us transcendence. Well, anyway, back to the first source and how we can use it. Deborah's granddaughter, Eulalie, is now a teen. And one memory I have of her is when she was about 3 or 4 years old, and she and Deborah and I would go for walks from time to time, and it would take a long time to go for a walk, because Eulalie would stop every couple of feet to turn over a rock or look at a flower. And she would say to Deborah, "Nona, come look at this," or, "What is that wiggly thing under the rock?" And this went on and on and on and on. So if we were going to walk up the hill and then back to the house, it usually took at least a half an hour or maybe an hour. But it was glorious to watch her curiosity and the wonder in her voice. And I think sometimes when we are adults, we think we don't have that anymore. But I don't agree. I think the capacity to feel wonder and awe stays with us through the very end of our lives. And based on what happened with Eulalie, I think that intense curiosity is a very healthy part of our relationship to the world, not only as children, but also as adults. So I'm going to suggest an idea that we will follow this spring. Let's use our curiosity to bring some personal relief in this crazy time. Because it's one thing to talk about all the serious things in the world that we need to take seriously, but it's another thing to be able to step away and restore ourselves in the beauty of the world and the beauty of us. Several people had recommended this book to me, Finding the Mother Tree, Discovering the Wisdom of the Forest, by forest ecologist and teacher Suzanne Simard. She lives in British Columbia and is a forest ecologist and teacher, as I said. And she has spent most of her life working with forests and how they are connected with one another, underground particularly. It's a book that looks at the interdependence and what she says is the awareness of forests and every single being in them, and especially trees. She interweaves stories of her personal life, which has been hard at times with cancer, divorce, and so on, with the teachings and science of the forest and how they're interwoven together. So what I want to do is to begin a regular book discussion group later in March using this book, which just came out a while ago, and it's available pretty much anywhere. I don't know if the gathering will be monthly or every 2 weeks or every week. It depends on what people who sign up want. Will we meet in person or on Zoom? Or both, because I think we can do both. That's another possibility. But more than that, I'd like to go to the next step of not just talking about things, because talking is great, but moving into the reality of, what is she talking about here? How can we experience even a bit of what she experienced and taught us in this book? So, my life partner Deborah lives in Oregon, as you all know, And she and I have been working on a, well, it's not a project, it's a meditation practice, really, called Shinrin Yoku, which translated from Japanese means either forest bathing, which sounded a little bit sinful, or forest therapy, which is what a lot of people prefer because, well, the first one sounds sinful. And she's had certification in it. I'm not there yet because I have a lot of work to do. And so I asked her, well, Deborah, because I wanted her to get here so you know she's not a figment of my imagination. So I texted her last night after we'd talked for about an hour on Zoom, and I said, would you be willing to come here later this year and guide us through a forest therapy experience? And she immediately texted me back and said, sure, we'll figure out a way to make it happen. So you may eventually meet Deborah, and you will, if you want, take advantage of her certification to be in the forest. And the way that it, well, there are many ways in which it's done, but one of them is to take a group of people out into the forest, or even fields, but forest is better, and everybody picks a spot by themselves. They do not have anything like this with them, and they sit for an hour, quietly, patiently, and all the senses take in everything that's happening, the wind, the sounds, the sights, of everything that's going on around us. And maybe a mosquito comes to bite you. You can either go, whatever, or go, and not kill the mosquito. All kinds of things can happen in that hour. If we stop, we listen, we look, and we open ourselves up to the possibility of awe and transcendence and wonder, none of which we left behind when we became adults. So I'd like us to think about this for a few moments before we do the offering. And if anyone is interested in this book discussion group, let me know. And just like I'll be taking this over, I'll also take this over in case anyone would like to see it or ask me more questions. Probably be in later March and probably on Thursdays. But let's take a little moment or two to just reflect on whatever I said, but also remember being in a forest or just out in nature and how it felt. Was it renewing? Did it give you any kind of hope? Did it take us beyond ourselves to something larger and more vast than we can imagine?